baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to episode 13 of the Johnny and Josh Show. Well known, of course, as Unlucky 13 for some, and definitely unlucky for JC and I, because this truly is the Johnny and Josh Show, because we're the only ones here. We haven't lost. We've lost Eric. We've lost Big Dave. And it's an unlucky number in history, as we know, JC. Are you feeling the pain that I'm feeling?
Gouldy, I feel like we're podcasting without a safety net. I mean, you know, we can always rely on something silly and off the wall from either Dave or Eric. And it's just, it's old times, man. It's just the two of us.
It is. It is like old times. And obviously, just to stick with the tradition of this new podcast that we've been doing now for a couple of seasons, I will just reference the number 13 in history. It brings the test, the suffering, and the death. It symbolizes the death to the matter or to oneself and the birth to the spirit. The passage on a higher level of existence. Well, hopefully Big Dave and Eric are somewhere on a higher level of existence, but let's hope the death is not right. Judas, of course, from a biblical reference, the 13th diner. We don't want him to be invited anyway, but I'm loving this because I know you're an intelligent man. You're an educated man. Have you ever heard of the word, and I'm going to have to look at it because I certainly can't remember it, triskaidekaphobia. Phobia, that's it.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah, that's fear of the number 13, right?
It is. The Greek-derived word meaning the fear of number 13. I'm more fearful of trying to say a word like that rather than fearing number 30. So what about notable 13s, JC? This is our new slot at the beginning of a show. Name me a few that you know of.
The one that interests me is Ralph Branca, who is a famous pitcher for the Brooklyn Dodgers.
The shot heard around the world.
Exactly. And I mean, that was the ultimate example of unlucky. Branca was, a journeyman pitcher. He gave up the home run to Bobby Thompson to lose it for the Brooklyn Dodgers in a one-game playoff to go to the postseason. And he was particularly unlucky, right? Because many years after that shot heard around the world, it was discovered that there was some chicanery going on in the background, that Bobby Thompson probably got the heads up through a very trash can gate type of scandal that what pitch was coming before right. He hit the home run. So 13 was very unlucky for the man.
Well, here's an add-on to that story. This, of course, was in 1951. Branca, as a result of what happened and wearing the number 13, switched to number 12 in 1952, which I didn't wear, but it didn't last. He was back in the number 13 uniform in 1953. So clearly he didn't have that good a season 52 either. It is a great story.
There's so much talk, Goldie, about superstition in baseball, right? Like pitchers, when you walk off the field, you don't step on the white line. You got to have the ball in a certain place. I mean, if you ever see Bull Durham, they do a great job of that with, wearing the, undergarment lingerie as a way to create luck. I was never really a superstitious player, but I understand why people are, and I'm shocked that anyone will wear 13 as a result for those guys who are in that category.
And we know that it's not unique to baseball, although baseball, I have to say, takes it to a whole new level. Every sport has got its sportsmen that are all horrifically superstitious. The whole thing of, never changing your socks or washing your socks because we're on a winning run all sounds pretty horrific. And I think that's true of Serena Williams. Apparently, if she starts off in a tournament and she wins, she keeps the same socks. It's a horrible thought. Anyway, and she's been hugely successful. You imagine how mingy those socks have been down the years.
That's the question. Does she hand wash them and then wear them again?
Apparently
or
not.
Does it have to have the stank?
Apparently, you can't. She doesn't hand wash them. They don't go near a wash if she just wears them. They're a bit sweaty. I assume she hangs them out on the balcony at the hotel, gives them a bit of an air.
Honestly, Gouldy, she's such a goddess that it probably smells like butterflies, roses, and rainbows.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Talking of goddesses, A-Rod, of course, was a famous number 13, not with his earlier teams, but with the Yankees. And I believe also Manny Mercado, and I didn't know this, A-Rod was his hero growing up, and that's why he chose number 19. Because he was supporting him.
You don't even want to say the word.
Exactly. A couple of more perhaps ones that we will recognize, or certainly I will, because obviously my involvement with baseball started in 97. Bobby Valentine, he wore number 13 in three seasons as a player. I think Omar Vizquel, one of my all-time favorites, the Cleveland Indians shortstop, he wore number Billy Wagner. Do you remember Billy Wagner, seven-time All-Star? Fifth in career saves. So there are quite a few that didn't seem to worry about number 13.
I wonder if that 13 has been the reason. I think Billy Wagner is fringe, if not in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion. Probably, the greatest left-handed closer Obviously, there have been some other great ones, John Franco, for example. But
yeah.
to me, Wagner, if you look at all the advanced analytics, he was as dominant as any. Maybe it's the number 13 that's just been that wall to prevent him from getting into Cooperstown.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Without Eric, we've got no Canadian COVID update, but I can guarantee you the borders are still closed. They're still in there. And of course, we also know that they are playing their baseball in Buffalo. Update elsewhere, I haven't seen any other mention. Now, I'm touching wood as I say it. Have you heard of any players being on the COVID IL at the moment this week?
No, it's been mum. I think it's we're getting there here in the US. Absolutely. To a certain extent. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, I assume that's the vaccine rollout. So I assume the players must have now got all vaccinated or certainly been close to it. And just to mention also from the last show, we referenced our Twitter followers on the Johnny and Josh show. We were at 1955. And I said, as soon as we get to 2000, I'm going to pick one random name from those 2000 followers and give them a JG gift bag. Well, we are up. We're up to 1962. We've gone up seven, JC. We're 38 off the total. At this rate, it'll take a whole season to get
there. Why don't I up the ante? I will also give something as well. So there will be two winners.
Holy mackerel. Well,
I know. You didn't see that one coming, did you?
Not. Hey, man, I went into my locker, which I've got a lot of kit because I'm now in a much smaller house than I used to be in. So I've got this storeroom, which is costing me an arm and a leg, but that's another story. And I found my baseball bags, all my goodie bags. I've got so much stuff, buddy. And these are brand new baseball tops of all sorts of teams. The Rockies, the Astros, the D-backs, not the obvious teams, the less obvious teams. And they are brand new. And we know how expensive this stuff is. I've got a host of caps, never been worn. They're brand new. So whatever goodie bag
I think most of them worn once, right? Most of the stuff comes from our road trips. So we would get the uniforms when we go to the various games, and we did so many stadiums. So you would actually, for a rare moment on rare occasions, dome the coif. So you would put, you know, the hat on for one moment to protect your personal helmet.
Do you think that enhances the value, or do you think that's destroyed the value?
I think it depends on people's fetishes.
Okay, that's a family show, yes. And that's in honor of Eric. Yeah. Okay. Well, whatever we do, we know we're going to put something together. And obviously, if you are a specific team supporter, whoever I choose, let me know who you support, and obviously, we will make sure, fingers crossed, that we've got one, whether it be a T-shirt, a top, a cap, or whatever. But it'll be worth something, I can guarantee you guys, because this is the real deal, and they do cost a lot of money. But we need to get to 2,000 followers, and at the moment, the Johnny and Josh show on Twitter is at 1962, a year after my birth. Would you believe it? Other good news, by the way. I don't like doing this because I don't think it's the sort of thing you should do. But I'm incredibly proud of you and Dave and Eric and all the team behind this show. We are now, this last week, we hit the top spot in the list of Apple podcasts. Now, I love this. It goes Apple Podcasts - Great Britain - Baseball. We're number one. We're number one, big guy. It may be a very small
who did this list, Gouldy? Was this like Lulu or the one, you know, somebody in your family? Big Dot, Tommy?
No, it's Apple. This is an Apple podcast list. Look it up, mate. You can look it up. We have been number two to the legend that is Buster Olney. And we all know Buster, ESPN, Buster Olney. I follow him. Very, very good podcaster. We've been number two to him for ages. But apparently last week, we tip now whether or not maybe he didn't do it.
Is this all time? Is this for
It's a weekly update. It's like, you know, it's like Top of the Pops. We're Top of the Pops, big guy.
So Gouldy, we're in trouble. We've lost, you know, our big guns in Dave and Eric. I'm just going to see us like, you know, down like an anchor to the bottom of the ocean when it's just the two of us.
You know, I should never have mentioned this. You're absolutely right. Because
this is 13th show. Superstition, Gouldy.
Absolutely. Well, next week, when we're like number ninth behind some bloke in an attic, you know, in Bradford, who's tipping us on a podcast.
As opposed to a bloke in his broom closet, which is you right now.
Exactly. But then there's no getting away from the reality that the reason we've slipped from number one to wherever we end up is because it's just you and me, because we've lost Big Dave and we've lost Eric.
The reality will be stark and painful.
Oh dear. Anyway, this is that time of the show when Eric's always telling us to play the piano. You can see it at the bottom. Hit the buttons, subscribe, follow, like, please like, give us a big thumbs up in the like department. That would be awesome, guys, because that's how we grow the family and we grow the brand that is the Johnny and Josh show. So please do that if you possibly can. Now, normally I'd be throwing to Eric at this stage to round off the introduction to say What's your trivia this week? I almost felt, and I know you agreed with me, that it wouldn't be right to do the trivia because we haven't got Eric with us. But actually, in honor of Eric, I do want to do the trivia, if that's right with JC. But what I'm going to suggest is we alternate. I'll do it 1 week, you do it the next week, if we're going to be on our own for a few weeks. So would you be kind enough to do this week's Eric in-game trivia?
Yeah, I mean, clearly, Gouldy, I'm a poor imitation of our friend Eric Jansen. I don't eat as well as him, you know. I don't wear the dodgy, you know, collared shirts wide open for his belly to hang out. Like, I don't do any of those things.
You take your cap off, you know, more often than not. Yeah, so there's no
this
similarity.
This is true. And for those who are watching this on YouTube, I am wearing a Montreal Expos cap this week in Eric's honor.
I noticed that, buddy, and I didn't even mention it. And that's in his honor, is it? Is that
of
in
course,
that?
Yeah.
So if you'd warned me, should I be wearing some kind of a Mets top or a Mets cap in Big Dave's honor?
I think you should wear your Chipper Jones jersey because he owned the Mets.
He did. Yeah. You're right. I'll go and get the Chipper Jones jersey off the side, and that'll be in honor of Big Dave. I'm sure that'll go down very well. Anyway, sorry, you were going to say.
Okay, so here's my poor imitation of our good friend Eric Jansen, Eric Stumper. We'll try and do Josh's somewhat Stumper on this one. And this is to respect our past histories. It's just the two of us. Of course, the Channel 5 show started in the 1990s, in 1997. So you have your knowledge of baseball. I know that anything before your time working with something, there's no chance. So, like, I wouldn't do that to you. Exactly.
Good man.
You shut her down, right? Yeah. So I'm going to give you something that at least partially begins with your time with baseball. Okay. So here is the question, Gouldy. Which major leaguer had the most hits in the 1990s? Okay. Most hits in the 1990s.
But you just said it yourself. The show started in 1997. I've got 7 years that's relevant to this question.
You will recognize all these names.
All right. So, I'll give you
four choices. Okay.
Okay. All right. Yeah, go on.
So A, Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah. Love Ken
B,
Griffey.
B, Tony Gwynn.
Oh, Gwynny.
C, Mark Grace.
Mark Grace. Okay. Yep. Yeah.
And D, who has a connection to our wonderful game still to this day because of his son, Dante Bichette.
Ooh, Dante Bichette.
All right, so a couple of big, you know, Hall of Famers, a couple guys who weren't quite as good, who maybe had a good run.
Yeah, so this is most hits in the 90s.
Most hits in the 1990s.
Okay, most hits in 90s. Okay, I'm writing that down.
A, Ken Griffey Jr., B, Tony Gwynn, C, Mark Grace, D, Dante Bichette.
And I've got that. I've got that. Pretty much to the end of the show, something stretched to come up with some kind of logical decision. Okay,
but can I tell you the problem though with just the two of us? You're not going to have time to sort of clandestinely sneak on your phone and try and find an answer.
You'll be surprised what I'm capable of doing. I'm going to let you waffle on while you're doing it. I'm going to look at the camera and nod while I'm holding my phone up.
Fantastic.
I promise not to do that. Okay, right, and I'm now going to do something. Ding! That was me hitting the bell because I haven't got a bell to hit.
So. I love that your ding sounds like a clap.
Yeah, maybe actually that wasn't so clever. No, I should have done that off camera, shouldn't I?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, let's move things along. We're into the leadoff hitter of the night. We're over a third of the way into the Major League Baseball regular season. Only, 4 weeks away from the All-Star game. So there's news aplenty as always. So here is our traditional leadoff hitter because here is the news roundup. Okay, we're going to kick things off. We're in the era of the juniors, JC. You know what I'm talking about. Top of the list, according to the Rasball Fantasy Baseball Player Rater, a site that I recommend to any fantasy baseball player because I think it's absolutely smack on. They've got right now the best players in baseball. Number one, Vlad Jr. Number two, Ronald Acuna Jr. Number three, Fernando Tatis Jr. These are the faces of baseball. We've talked about it before, that basically baseball has not done a good job of selling the game, having those characters that people can really buy into. And no offense to Mike Trout, a phenomenal baseball player, but he's just a guy who loves to go home, love his wife, love his kids, and just get on with his life. I don't feel that he has that notoriety, that color, that would sell the game. These three are incredibly exciting to watch. I will always watch a game when they are playing. These guys are the futures. Do you have a sense of what baseball should be doing to use these three to really expand the brand globally, let alone within the US?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is just one of the great marketing opportunities for baseball, because anyone who knows anything about the sport knows that it is a game all you have to do is see Field of Dreams, that is passed down from one generation to the next, from father to son, from mother to daughter, father to daughter, mother to son. It's a sport where what adds to its glow is that combination and that connection from generation to generation. And here is a great opportunity to highlight that, to highlight what baseball really has a great value, which is the nostalgic feel, right? That you remember it as a kid. You listen to James Earl Jones in Field of Dreams talking about that, you know, that feel, that texture of being a child, holding the hand of your parent, going to a game. Yeah. And you have these players who physically represent what that means, right? All these guys with the junior in their name are people who have taken the game from their father or mother, you know, but in this case, it's probably the father, and brought it to the next generation and improved the game, perfected it to the next level. I mean, even when you're talking about Vladdy, right? I mean, that's a Hall of Famer and another potential Hall of Famer. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. brings a whole new excitement to the game. And baseball has a long history of this, right? I think of, like, you know, Robinson Cano, the Boones. There were three generations yet, you know, Ray Boone, Bob Boone, and then, you know, Aaron Boone and you know, his brother Brett Boone. So this is something historical, but having the junior in the name, I think that adds a little something. It really does bring this home.
And they're great characters. I mean, they are colorful characters. And that, to me, is what's important. You know, I'll give you an example from a parallel here in Bath, okay? The most popular player for Bath Rugby Club in recent years is a guy called Matt Banahan. Now, Matt, apart from being a lovely bloke who was brilliant with the fans, gave everything he had on the field, would play injured, would play out of position if that's what the team needed. He was a team man. He did get selected for England by Martin Johnson, okay? But this guy is like 6'7". He's covered in tats. Now, that may not be, when you're a worried father and your daughter's going out on a date, the sort of guy you want dating. But you know what? The kids loved him. Not only because he was so great with the kids, so great with the adults, but covered in the tats. You know, he was someone they could relate to. Someone, and he was enormous. He was 6'7" and yet ran as fast as, you know, as a 100-meter sprinter. And I think that's what we need to remember as old timers. You know, we need to get out of our comfort zone. The kids do not relate in the way that we related. They need something a lot more exciting, something much more relevant to them. And that's what I love about these three. You know, look at the way they wear their hair. They're covered in the tats, the way they walk, the way they operate. First and foremost, they're phenomenal baseball players, but they're real characters to boot. And I just pray, because let's be honest, MLB does not have a great record on this front. I pray they work out how to utilize these guys to really advance the brand and put baseball back where it should be.
Well, just as an aside, Gouldy, these players really did come up with such an advantage. I played with a couple of players in college whose fathers were either managers or coaches in the big leagues. Jeff Torborg, longtime manager, his son Dale Torborg played with me. And then a player by the name of Tom Sant, whose father was also Tommy Sant, who was the first base coach for Jim Leland for many years with the Pirates.
All right. Yeah.
And in both instances, these guys came onto the field understanding the game in a way that anyone who didn't have a parent who had really had that high level experience would have, a savvy, an understanding of the game, an appreciation of the game. And that's why when people sort of get on Tatis Jr. about, you know, sort of his flamboyance, I say that's BS, because he understands the game in a way that honestly, most of us don't. Yeah. And the same goes for the Bo Bichettes of the world and the Kevin Biggios of the world, that they understand that linkage over time. And yes, they may be doing it a little differently, but I know in my heart that all of them have a respect for the game because they've seen the grind that their fathers had to go through to have success in the sport. And that humbles you. And that makes you a better person and a better player.
And you see all the great footage of them and as very young kids at the ballpark with their dad, hanging out, watching batting practice, watching games, getting on the field. You're right. They've lived it. They've lived it their whole lives. They do understand it. They are the future. I love the juniors, all three of them. And I agree with you. The junior aspect, I think, is fantastic. Someone's got to really focus on that. Okay, well, that's our news roundup number one. I want to now move on to the news with the All-Star Game only a matter of weeks away, 3-4 weeks away. We finally got our first name on the Home Run Derby list. We've been lucky enough to go to a few of the Home Run Derbies. How exciting are they? Big part of the All-Star festivities. And I'm so excited that the first name to be announced, definitely taking part, Shohei Ohtani. How good is that, JC?
That's huge, Gouldy. I mean, the Home Run Derby has the opportunity to really supercharge or turbocharge the All-Star weekend. It's a special event when you have people who are enthusiastic to be there and who are big names. And we we saw one of the greatest ones ever at Yankee Stadium, the last year at Yankee Stadium, when Josh Hamilton went off. And I honestly believe clearly Ohtani has the chance to be there. And this home run derby may be unique in all of them because it's going to be held at Coors Field, which is a home run haven.
Yeah.
So you're going to see, you know, probably record, potentially, I wouldn't say probably, but potentially record-breaking experiences here in the rarefied air of Denver. I mean, this has all the makings of being a great home run derby. And you put Ohtani in it, who to me, and I know, you know, you love the Tatis Juniors and Vladdy Jr. I like them very much. To me, Ohtani is the best player in baseball. He is my favorite player to watch. To have that power, he has speed, you know, he has double-digit stolen bases. And he gets on the hill and can throw, you know, 100 miles an hour. This guy is... We talk about a 5-tool player. This guy's a 10-tool player, right?
Absolutely.
And so 100%. to get him in the home run derby and to cast more light onto him as a marketable star, because playing for the Angels, let's be honest, it's not playing for the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Cubs even. You know, it's down south in Southern California and doesn't get the same level of attention because the team typically hasn't been good. This is a great chance. I'm just over the moon about it.
You say he's a 5-tool player right now, this season, 46
10-tool runs. Player.
10-tool player, 46 runs, 21 home runs, 50 RBIs, 10 stolen bases, 355 on-base percentage, 73 Ks, 270 ERA, 116 whip. I'd be happy with those stats in any of my fantasy players, let alone what he brings from a hitting offensive. Is he, if he continues in this vein, is he your MVP for the season?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this comes down to the big debate, right? Is the MVP the most valuable player to his team, the best player in the league?
Yeah.
In my opinion, best player in the league, hands down. To be able to do that on both sides of the field, it's incomparable. It's incomparable. Yeah. And if he maintains that and puts up a full season worth of those numbers, I don't think you have a choice. Now, if the Angels are a middling team, then you have to take into consideration if there was a player on a team that went to the postseason, went to the World Series. You won't know if he'll be in the World Series when you vote, but, you know, got to the postseason on the back of a singular player. And if you have that situation, then you're going to have to sort of weigh the two.
Absolutely. Well, let's keep our fingers crossed for the other attendees of the Home Run Derby, because if they had the likes of Tatis, Acuna, any of those as well, how phenomenal would that? Maybe Brian Buxton, if he's fit and healthy again. Be very exciting. We look forward to that. Let's move on, though. My third story of the week that I want to get your view on is the horrific story, and I know how personal this is to you, and I'm feeling your pain because I'm getting annoyed by it now, is continuation of how minor leaguers are undervalued by Major League Baseball. Story out this week. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter. Baltimore AA affiliate players considering sleeping in their car. Why? They've got a 2-week homestand and they've been given $900 all in. So basically the only way to make the numbers work for them is they're all thinking about sleeping in the car rather than a B&B or a little hotel motel. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I'm sorry. With the money that's in baseball, we're not talking semi-amateurs. We're talking AA affiliate players, potential superstars of the future. $900 for 2 weeks? Ridiculous.
Yeah, you call it ridiculous. I call it disgusting. I mean, it's two steps beyond that. And the first two items that we talked about in this roundup, Gouldy, were both positive ones, right? You know, you got Ohtani at the home run derby. You've got, these great young players in the major leagues. But the reality is until you clean up your house, I don't care about any of that. You know, you could try and cast attention to these great stories, but as long as you are treating these minor league players the way you're treating it, none of it matters. Major League Baseball is a subpar league until they solve this problem. And it's their problem now. You know, in the past, minor league teams had a lot more autonomy. They would go out and get families to host these players.
Yeah.
They were a little bit more of their own island working in a relationship. Major League Baseball said, oh, we want to have more control of the minor leagues. You take more control, which I didn't like anyway, but if you're going to do that, then you take this responsibility on in a more meaningful way. And it's just, it's a load of crap, to be honest, what they're doing. And I want to see more attention on this until this is solved. We talk about all this stuff on the field. That's great. But these are human lives. These are people trying to make a living. And again, I've said this before, Major League Baseball deserves a lot of gruff for this, the majority of it. But the Players Association deserves some responsibility for this too. as someone who represented players in the majors and minor leagues, I know the difference between the way they handle it. Now, officially, they'll say, oh, we don't represent the players in the minor leagues. We really represent major leaguers until they get there. They're not our purview. But as part of their collective bargaining agreement, they have the ability to negotiate on the draft, which is the first step and the only place where players make money until, like real money, until they make it to the major leagues, or at least to AAA, where you're making sort of like $100,000. So they have a way and a leverage point to help solve this problem. And if they wash their hands of it, they're complicit too.
I cannot agree warmly. And I'm really well said as well. It's a stain on Major League Baseball that is so easily erased. That's what I don't understand. And I want to give you a parallel. In the world of rugby, teams that are doing so well, building an ethos, the likes of Bristol, the likes of Exeter, you don't build that ethos by treating kids that are coming up through the system badly. You know, surely with billionaire owners, somebody's going to tweet, you know what, if I completely go against the grain here and take good care of these guys, my God, they're going to give me everything they've got. That to me is a no-brainer. You will give everything you've got if you perceive someone who is perceived to be your boss treats you well, treats you with respect. That is the case in all business. And baseball is a business. So why would you not do that? It makes my blood boil. You're getting me now to that level.
I mean, Gouldie, this is a cultural problem in general, which is that people who run very high profile spaces, industries, whether it's the entertainment industry, I've seen this in the entertainment industry, I've seen this in politics, I've certainly seen it in sports. They assume that because it's such a sexy industry to be in, the people will claw, scrape, and do whatever they can just to be a part of it. And that's honestly been the argument for too long. And that's just wrong.
Hey, it's
wrong.
It's so interesting.
They work just as hard.
Buddy, so interesting you should say that. I used to work, as you know, when we were doing the baseball show, I used to work for London Tonight, which was the like ITN regional news, but it was an award-winning show. It had a global, a national budget, because obviously London is 10 million people. It was a big, big show. And I was employed, and I can tell you now, all these years later, I started working there about 96 before we started doing the baseball show as a sports reporter. And I was getting paid 150 quid for a hard day's work. Fair wage, no issue with that whatsoever. I then got asked to present as in a sort of freelance capacity to cover the sports presented, which obviously I really wanted to do. And I had done it for like 2-3 years. And I was still, when I did those shifts, on the same money, 150 quid. Never got a pay rise for either one, the fact that I was a lot more experienced, but also the fact that I was also presenting, not just reporting. And I went to see the boss and say, can I have a small pay rise on those shifts when I present? Just to represent the fact that I'm doing a different job. And he said, well, I'll think about it, come back. Came back about a week later. He said, I've looked at the numbers and no, we can't afford it. And I said, well, hang on. So basically what you're saying is you do not value my contribution as a presenter. No, 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 that's not what I'm saying. I said, well, it is, because you're paying me 150 as a reporter and you pay me 150 as a reporter and a presenter. So the presenter bit, you're basically taking for nothing. You are treating me as though I'm not worth anything as a presenter. How does that make me feel? And he just looked at me and he went, well, there's plenty of people out there that would take your job in an instant.
Well, and keep in mind, Gouldie, today, particularly with sports, that the expectation for preparation is, exponentially higher now than it was in the 90s, than it was in even the 2000s. So whereas, you know, if it were 1965, you literally in your off season would go off and, you know, move furniture or work, towards your law degree. And that was the expectation. And everyone was doing that. So you were on level with those players. So you really could find time outside of baseball to make more money. It still wasn't right. People still should have been paid, you know, an honest wage. But today, that's not possible. You have to take every moment to get the edge, to get the advantage. And so the expectation of what you give to get to the major leagues now is so high, and it precludes you from doing anything else that it's ridiculous to continue to pay as if it were a period where people could take a different approach to it. It's wrong on every level. And until Major League Baseball, I know people who have turned away from the sport for this reason, and I understand that.
And I do want to say, just in conclusion to this, that what we're not saying is that people should just be paid loads of money right from the off and not earn the respect, not earn the right. That's not what we're saying at all. It's just about a fair wage that's representative of what they're doing. And it isn't fair right now. Now, talking about it isn't fair, if you're a D-backs fan, you must be absolutely, completely and utterly depressed right now. Here are the numbers, okay? They've lost 14 straight as of tonight. We're recording on the 19th, Saturday night. 14 straight. Their record now 20-50, which is a 286 winning percentage. They've lost an MLB record 23 consecutive road games when they lost last week. I think they got swept by the San Francisco Giants. They're now playing the Dodgers at home, got beaten last night. Actually, quite a decent performance from their starting pitcher, but they still ended up losing 4-0. That's a three-game series. They've got another three-game series at home against guess who? The Brewers, very competitive side. And they're off again on their travels, and then they play three games against the Padres. It doesn't look like it's going to get any better any sooner. What can you say for D-backs fans, JC? What hope can you give them?
I mean, that some health will come back to the team. I mean, that's been a huge part of it, right?
Horrific,
I think something like 17 players on the DL for various reasons. I mean, they've gone sort of deep into their minor league system to keep things going. You had that great moment with Madison Bumgarner early in the year, then he's injured. It's just a team that isn't a terrible team. I mean, you look at the lineup and there's some solid baseball players. You know, Eduardo Escobar has been really solid this year. Peralta's had a long, reasonable career. You know, Ketel Marte is a good player. There are players on this team that are good. I mean, obviously the pitching has been a massive struggle. So get healthy, you know. Baseball is a game of momentum. That's one thing always to remember about the sport. So as bad as it's been, that if they can just sort of start putting together a handful of good performances and get that momentum, they're not going to be a 500 team. But to avoid a historically bad season, that's still within their power. And I think that that's at least something that you can work for and have a goal towards out of a matter of pride.
Okay, well, we wish them all the best. I never like to see that sort of level of defeat and despair. So I do hope the D-backs can get back on track. Last off for the roundup, that is the news. We will do, of course, despite not having our dear friend Eric with us, the Badoo Watch. And I'm very happy to tell you, JC, he's on a 7-game hitting streak. He played in 5 games last week of the 7 possible games. And he went 7-for-19. So his on-base percentage still continue to look really good. He's obviously getting to play quite regularly. He is still very much in a platoon, obviously. He's not tending to hit against lefties. Only 3 runs to his name. No RBIs, no home runs, no stolen bases. But hey, in a team that's struggling, at least he's getting on base. At least he's doing that bare minimum.
Yeah, I mean, I think he can probably cash in that ticket to Toledo. He doesn't have to go anymore. He can use that money for good dinners. He's done solidly. There's credit to our man Badoo. He is doing it.
Yeah, a view to a kill. For those of you who are listening for the first time, we are doing an Akil Badoo watch just because we love the name. And our thanks to Craig, who came up with the terminology, a view to a kill. It's a great line. Akil Badoo, check him out, Detroit Tigers. And of course, with a wonderful family supporting as well. Some great footage on online if you haven't seen it already. Right, hitting the bell. Ding. There you go. We're going to move on. Was that better?
Yeah. It was better than clapping. Well, no, it was the clapping. It was like it was the wrong sound. You needed a good Foley artist right.
I clapped and I dinged. I mean, that's just total confusion.
That's just confusion, right? I know. That's
a sound effect out of control. That is.
I think you need a producer to sort that out for you.
Don't. You're going to upset me. I'm going to be in tears. I know. Right, second batter. The crackdown on foreign substances update. And we've got to update this. I mean, indicative of how big an issue this seems to be coming across the pond, there was a piece on Good Morning America about alleged juice balls. And obviously, we've then been talking about what MLB are now trying to do to try and help out the fact that at the moment, pitching seems to be totally dominating Major League Baseball. They announced proper crackdowns on the use of sticky substances. It's going to begin in earnest on June the 21st, which is Monday. The official release went out on Tuesday, lengthy missive if ever there was one, that explained what MLB sees as the problem. And we know it is an issue, but obviously largely avoiding responsibility for creating the problem. JC, I've been looking very quickly at what the details of this is. Basically, the punishment for a first-time offender was specified. They're going to say 10 days with subsequent violations subjected to progressive discipline. So obviously that punishment will get bigger and bigger if a pitcher gets done more. Starting pitchers will have more than one mandatory check per game, with mandatory checks on relief pitchers after an inning or when they exit the field, whichever happens first, to reduce in-game delays. Umpires could stop the game to check any pitcher at any time if they're suspicious because of a player touching his glove or cap or whatever the days. An opposing manager needs to ask an umpire to check the pitcher are over. That's just the very basics of what they have announced. What's your reaction to this news?
The two interviews that I saw that were most meaningful to me about the subject were with one current pitcher and one former pitcher. Tyler Glasnow, pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays, a real star for that team, was interviewed. He has hurt his UCL, the ligament that's known for the Tommy John surgery. He said that he was honest. He said, you know, I've used it in the past. I used it because one of the things I was always taught to reference Bull Durham again is to hold the ball like an egg. You're supposed to hold the ball lightly. And the first game in which I did not use it, I had to hold the ball tighter. And doctors were telling me that that could potentially affect my, not necessarily mechanics, but sort of my biomechanics. And, you know, I pitched that game and I had a good game. And the next day I woke up and I was feeling pain that I had not felt because I had to hold the ball tighter and I was throwing it differently. And I thought, well, okay, I'll just sort of get better at this over time. Well, the next game out, he hurts his elbow. He may be out at least, you know, 6 weeks minimum. Potentially he's going to have Tommy John surgery. And my takeaway from that, which I think is a very fair point, if you're going to make this sort of change, you do not do it mid-season. You've got to make the change at the off season to allow pitchers to adjust. You're asking something that has just been an endemic part of the game and asking players to completely change the way they do it mid season. And I think there might be some physical danger there. So I think that that's a legitimate point from Tyler Glasnow. The second interview was with Peter Moylan, a relief pitcher, threw for your Braves for many years, Dodgers, international pitcher from Australia, he's pitched in Europe. With the Czech Republic. He's a broadcaster now. And he made, you know, another point, which is that you cannot use a sledgehammer where, you know, a scalpel is needed or, you know, whatever, a chainsaw to use, you know, various metaphors here. And his point was that, look, a little bit of tackiness to be able to hold the ball is one thing. It's another thing to take spider tack, to be able to use the ball in a way where you increase your rotations.
Yeah.
And there's a huge difference between the two. And you could figure out a way probably to you know, get somewhere in the middle. I recognize that's hard because I think people will keep on pushing the boundaries. But maybe these two stories together could solve this problem, which is that for the rest of this season, allow the sunscreen and the rosin to get a little stickiness, okay? Or whatever the thing is for a little stickiness. And at the end of the season, say, all right, pitchers, you guys got to go back to the drawing board, figure it out. But to do everything all at once, it's typical Major League Baseball, not being nuanced about anything. And that's really what they need to be in what is a complicated situation.
Yeah. My reaction, and this is as obviously relatively new to the game. I haven't been brought up on baseball my whole life. I've never played as you have done, and let alone at the level you have done. My immediate reaction to this is it's yet again one of these gray areas, and baseball seems to have a lot of them, where there isn't real clarity. You know, you talked about the rosin and sunscreen, and it's been sort of an accepted grip agent for decades, and now suddenly it is no longer accepted. So if you're looking at a pitcher in an afternoon game in a non-dome stadium, you know, they've got to be incredibly careful not to mix the sunscreen on the arm and the sweat on his brow and the rosin from the band because it's potentially a 10-game suspension. They've also said it's not just the pitchers. They said if they find the catchers doing anything similar, the outfield, or even apparently a coach who trains a pitcher on how to avoid detection will be subject to severe discipline. So everybody comes under the guise. But it just seems crazy to me that if it's been sort of accepted, you sort of created the monster yourself. And now suddenly you're trying to sort of, you know, as you say, sort of almost out of the blue, say, no, we're going to crack down on it with no sort of opportunity to adapt, etc. Do you accept, though, that there is a problem that needs to be addressed? And I'm going to quote you some stats here. I think they're now saying this season last, the average strikeout rate is about 24%. And yet in 2009, it was 18%. That is a massive jump, massive.
There are a lot of factors.
Right, I was going to say, are there more?
There's certainly a lot of factors, but I've said on this show that yes, I think that the tackiest substance, the really sticky stuff that allows you to get that kind of grip to really break off that 12-6 curveball or the slider, or just even with the fastball to get that snap, that needs to go away. Because pitchers already have way too many advantages, and yeah, you know, pitchers may groan and say, "Well, they taught me this," but games change. You have to modify. You have to change. Whether it's getting rid of the tacky substance, lowering the mound, changing the rubber, things will change in order to try and create parity on the field. And this is one way to do it. But there are two great caveats to that. One is you don't do it in the middle of the season where players can injure themselves because they don't have time to prepare with the baseballs to change their approach. And two, there may be something in between. You bring up a really great point, Goldie, which is that it's not just pitchers who need tackiness. You'll see shortstops, third basemen do things that are similar so that they can get good grip on the ball. I mean, weather is different. I know when I've played in cold weather, the ball is incredibly slickery. So here's a situation where, yeah, you're going to want a little stickiness. For me, I you may know this, I sweat so much when I played baseball. They called me Pig Pen, right? Because I sweat and I would get so much dirt on me, but my hands would get really wet. And for me, what I needed, I mean, stickiness probably would have been great, but I had to continually put my hand in the dirt, wipe it off to keep it dry. You know, you don't have rosin behind the plate. So each player has something a little different about who they are that they need a little help. You can find, again, not middle ground, more towards limiting, but giving a little bit of leeway so that players can you know, not completely lose their livelihood. Just get away from the heavy, tacky stuff.
Yeah. Okay. No, I think that's totally right. And I'm sorry to hear about your physical problems. Maybe you want to give Prince
Andrew.
It's
the opposite. It's the opposite. I cleanse, Goldie. People don't sweat. They don't cleanse.
So no wonder you haven't got Prince Andrew's number on your mobile. That explains it, you know, because he can help you out on that one.
Oh, my God.
It's a family show. Let's move on to it. Okay, I'm just going to give you one last reference. Buster Olney, who I've already mentioned, who obviously is our big rival when it comes to podcasts, and he put out an interesting stat about the slash line for all MLB hitters. This is the sort of league average between April 1st, June the 4th, was 236 batting average, a 312 on-base percentage. Then on June the 5th, they announced that umpires will be conducting foreign substance checks. And how MLB has compiled foreign substance scouting reports on some pitchers. And then in the next week, MLB hitters were hitting 247 batting average, and that is a league average, which is quite a jump.
So a small sample size, but something
it is,
to watch.
But it is definitely something to watch. Yeah. Brilliant. Okay, mate. Ding dong. That's Eric's bell. We're moving on.
I love that the bell changes each time. It was ding, now it's ding dong. Boom, boom. What's going to come next?
The minute I did it, I thought, I don't think that was the same ding as last time. But anyway, okay.
No, we're the continuity people.
We're on our own. Oh, my God.
I know. Safety net. Safety net.
I feel like I'm on a desert island. Okay. With you.
I know you don't want to share that with me.
I don't. You don't want to share it with me. You know how much I snore. Anyway, our third batter up for bat. And I know this is one you really wanted to get into, and I'm really pleased. New baseball's embracing of Negro leagues is an atonement, not a validation. That was the quote of an article, which went on to say, numbers drive baseball, but for decades, the human aspect of the game, specifically the racism that pro baseball both reflected and perpetrated, clouded that data. While the feats of white players were carefully recorded and celebrated, the accomplishment of black players in the Negro leagues was set apart or, even worse, forgotten entirely. And now we've got the announcement of baseballreference.com, which you tell me is the messiah of baseball stats. Announced Tuesday, it's added more
the Mecca than the Messiah.
Mecca. Okay, yeah. The Mecca. Okay. Important terminology. Thank you for that. It has added more than 3,400 Negro League players to its database. And just before I bring you in, because I know you're going to absolutely go major on this one, it is really fascinating to put the immediate results of this. There is Tetelo Vargas of the 1943 New York Cubans is now credited with the single seeding batting average record of 471. So he's gone right to the top of the pile. Oscar Charleston is now listed in fourth in career OPS. And that's ahead of Barry Bonds. That's ahead of Jimmy Fox. That's ahead of Josh Gibson. So these are major developments. And I'm assuming this is what you're going to get into, long overdue.
Oh, without a doubt. Now, Goldie, I want to give you an analogy and you're going to have to stick with me because it may be a little bit out there.
Go for it.
That really puts this in perspective. You know, I've written a couple of books on language. One of the things about language that always comes up is, for definitions, what should drive it? Should it be what's in the dictionary, or should it be usage? And you know, an example would be like the phrase champion at the bit, you know, which means you're really keen, you're really excited. Over years, people now use chomping with the bit. So should it be the what we see in the dictionary, a champion at the bit is what we use, or should it be chomping with the bit because everyone says it that way? So is it the book or is it the usage? what Major League Baseball tried to do is, with this announcement about the Negro Leagues and making it a major league, official major league, was to change the rules, you know, the rules about the way we see it. But you also need to change the usage in order for it to work. And that's true with language. In my opinion, it's really a combination of the two, right? You look at the rules, but you really need the usage as well too. And that's what's so great about this and why this is so important, is that we go from this sort of nebulous rule that Major League Baseball is offering to proper usage. This is what anyone who is a real fan of baseball looks at when they look at history. They go to Baseball Reference. And this is the proper application and what is necessary to really make what Major League Baseball said stick in the real world. I am beyond chuffed that this has occurred, because this is what is required for us to take that step to truly appreciate and truly respect it. If it had have just been Major League Baseball saying, oh, you know, the Negro Leagues, they're an official league, their stats are official, but nothing was done in the outside world to memorialize that, to make that part of our conversation. And right, for baseball, stats are the lingua franca. It is the language of baseball. Yeah. And so this move is huge. It's huge for the sport. It's huge for our historical understanding. And it's a great move. I've always been a huge fan of Baseball Reference. And this just increases my respect for the people who run it.
Here's a quote that I loved. We are not bestowing a new status on these players or their accomplishments. This is Baseball Reference. The Negro Leagues have always been major leagues. We are changing our site's presentation to properly recognize this fact. And I love that. I love that. I love that statement that no matter whether they've been treated like major leaguers, they've always been major leaguers. And what's happening now is not changing that.
For sure. And you look at some of the pages for these players now, and Satchel Paige's history on the site goes from, wow, he had some interesting major league experiences. You know, he did great with the Indians, you know, was able to come back and play a little bit with the Athletics right at the end, to, oh my God, this is one of the greatest pitchers of all time, because all of a sudden his statistics from his whole Negro League career are now integrated in with those major league statistics. And You get a better context for who this player was. It's fantastic. I love Baseball Reference. I'm in it. So I love them because they include minor leaguers as well, too. So my very brief minor league career is in there as well. It's just a great site. When I was a kid, there was this book called The Baseball Encyclopedia. It was this thick, thick book. And they would update it every handful of years. And my dad would always get it for me. And it was the magical, the paper was wafer thin because it had the statistic for every major leaguer. And there was no internet. And it was this wonderful resource that spoke to me in the game in a language I understood, which was batting average, you know, RBIs. There were none of these advanced analytics, and it made me so happy. And Baseball Reference is the extension of that in this era, and they have all the analytics, and it's so great for them to take what had become a rule and make usage a part of our understanding of it.
Yeah, and obviously the equivalent for our English baseball fans is Wisden. If you're into cricket, The Wisden is like the almanac, and it's got every, and that includes actually schoolboy cricket. So I've appeared in a couple of the Wisdens when I was still at school at Epsom College with my dodgy batting average. But yeah, you're right. I remember getting a copy just simply because I was in there. It was so exciting, and referencing all the real cricketers. I know you're a massive fan of Bob Kendrick, the president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. I want to mention another quote that Bob comes out with. The Negro League players themselves were never seeking validation from anyone. They knew how good they were. They knew how good their league was. It's a great story. It's horribly long overdue. It should not be a conversation we're having in 2021.
And there's more action that still needs to be done. Right now, there is an effort to rename the National League MVP trophy for Josh Gibson. It's right now Kenesaw Mountain Landis, who was, you know, the longtime commissioner, who honestly, you know, whether you believe it or not, you know, there's a lot in the gray area and the ether of time, but, you know, he was certainly a person who was in the middle of the segregation period of baseball. His name is on the trophy right now. And I love this move. There's been this really fun online effort to help bring attention to this, in that artists have drawn baseball cards of Josh Gibson to support it. Andy Brown, who's one of our great baseball artists here in the UK, or not here, but in the UK. He did one of them. He did a great baseball card type painting of Josh Gibson. And I hope that will be another step in the process.
Fantastic. Not a good story in some respects, but a great story in others. So one of those rose old ones. And thanks for bringing it to my attention. Okay, I'm going to hit the bell. Ding. There you go.
Ring-a-ding-ding. Ring-a-ding. You got to do a different one every time now.
You think so?
Ring-a-ding-ding.
Well, no, I was thinking ding or ring-a-ding. I didn't really know of another
ding. You did ding-dong, you did ding, or ring-a-ding-ding.
I didn't do ring-a-ding-ding. Ding-dong. Yeah. I did ding-dong, did I?
Well, ding. Yeah, you know that phrase.
Well, yes, I would.
Your ding-dong.
One of my almost favorite movies, yes. Ding-dong. Yes, what was his name? Leslie Phillips. Fantastic. What a marvelous man. Right, seventh inning stretch time. For those of you watching on YouTube, I'm here in my little man cave in Bath doing the seventh inning stretch. And it is time for Baseball Book of the Week. And this is obviously normally Eric's little slot, but I wanted to pick up on one that I've just ordered. I'm looking forward to reading about. And it's entitled The 300 Club. Have we seen the last of baseball's 300 game winners? And it's by Dan Schlossberg. Have you heard of this one, buddy?
I have not heard of the book. I've heard of Dan Schlossberg, though.
Right. Well, he's basically, since the beginning of Major League Baseball, this is what it says on the book. In 1876, only two dozen pitchers have won 300 games. And because of new philosophies about pitch counts, a lot of relief pitchers, etc., there's a good chance that the 300 Club has admitted its last member. And the 300 Club, last of a breed, author Dan Schlossberg, chronicles the most exclusive fraternity in baseball, starting off with Cy Young and Walter Johnson, the only two players to win more than 400 games. What's your thoughts? Do you think we'll ever see another 300 game win?
I mean, I think it's going to be difficult under the way we approach baseball right now, but baseball has a long continuum of history and tactics, strategies change over time. I don't think it's the most unattainable of benchmarks. I think that there are, you know, certainly records that are going to be hard to break. I think for now and the way we see baseball now, yeah. I mean, I don't see any current pitcher getting there at this point.
Okay, well, this is obviously their advertising. I've yet to read it, but I love the look of it, and that's why I've ordered it. So I will mention it. The 300 Club is about the last of a breed, but the book is the first of its kind, a fast-paced and thorough exploration of the best pitchers the game has ever seen. So if that is your thing, you're looking for something late at night to see you off into the wee hours, then I highly recommend The 300 Club. Have we seen the last of baseball's 300-game winners? By Dan Schlossberg. Now, JC, we're going to move on for our cultural reference that is normally Eric's responsibility. Have you come up with a TV reference? Because this is just not my world at all. What baseball TV reference would you like to delve into?
I'm not going TV. I'm actually going film and stage because, you know, okay. I'm a little more rarefied than Eric. I go to, you know, the big screen over the little box.
Oh, yeah, some Hollywood nothing.
As you know, I was in L.A. last week visiting my family. And yep. As we do when I'm with my folks and my kids, we'll sit down and watch a movie. And I recommended a film that was originally a stage musical, Damn Yankees, which is one we haven't really talked about, and is just a fantastic, fun baseball movie. At the height of the golden age, the film came out in 1958. And there are a couple of really interesting elements. Obviously, the music is great. You gotta have heart. Very famous song, and Whatever Lola Wants. So it's got really good music, great acting. Tab Hunter, who was not a great actor, was probably the best role. Gwen Verdon, who was an amazing Broadway star, plays Lola. Ray Walston. It's a great cast, and there's some fun baseball pieces to it. And a couple of things to know if you ever do watch it. One thing about budgets and Hollywood in that era is that you really didn't go anywhere, you know, there wasn't sort of on location. You would just find a place in LA, in the greater Hollywood area, and make it work. So even though the film is called The Damn Yankees, it's really about the Washington Senators and a long-suffering Washington Senator fan who's given a Faustian bargain opportunity to become young again and to help the Senators beat those damn Yankees to win the pennant. Rather than going out to DC and shooting in the stadium there, Yankee Stadium, they actually took, because there was a brief period there where Major League Baseball was played in Wrigley Field. Now, not the Wrigley Field in Chicago, but there was a Wrigley Field where the Dodgers and Los Angeles Angels played in the PCL. And so it was shot there. So that was interesting in that it wasn't really a major league park in the truest sense of that, but they do a good job of making it look kind of major league for the scenes. The other thing I really liked about about that movie is that, you know, this was still an era where films were very whitewashed. And one thing that the director George Abbott did is that he made sure that the team, the Senators team, was more integrated. You know, there's an African-American player, there are players of different nationalities on that team when they have dancing scenes. And while that may see something kind of small, and it wasn't, you know, done in sort of a, you know, incredible integrated way, but that they had different faces there is a tip of the hat to George Abbott and to the fact that, you know, you wanted to see more of that, and they did a good job on that.
How old is this movie?
Came out in 1958, but it was a musical before that on Broadway, a very famous musical. Bob Fosse, one of the greatest choreographers of all time, choreographed it, has a small role in the film too. Does a dance bit with Gwen Verdon, who was his wife.
It's one of the few baseball movies I've never seen, so thank you for that. I will definitely go and make a point of
before or after Spinal Tap.
I was about to say, I thought I'd better watch that than Spinal Tap. So, yeah.
You got the to-do list growing there.
No, absolutely. Great for that. Well, if you want to watch a baseball movie, there's our recommendation. Damn Yankees. And I do love baseball. There are so many great baseball movies. And actually, I would love to hear from you. Just as a question out there in the world of Twitter and Facebook, why don't you tweet me and tell me what's your favorite baseball movie and why? And we will give you a mention on future shows. So there's something for those regular listeners to the Johnny Josh Show podcast. Thank you for that, JC. And I'm afraid to finish off the seventh inning stretch, we need you to finish with the in-game trivia. You set the question. Can you remind our listeners, please?
Yeah.
You
know, so in the theme, Eric Jr.'s stumper, right? Because we've got a Junior's theme for the show. So our question was, in homage to the origins of our friendship, although this predated my time on the Channel 5 show. That show started in the 1990s. So we are looking for the most hits in the 1990s by a major league player. And I gave you four options, Gouldy, to cogitate on. Yep. The first one in A is Ken Griffey Jr.
Yep.
C was Tony Gwynn.
Yep.
C, Mark Grace, or D, Dante Bichette.
Okay, well, the first two are the ones that I'm much more familiar with and are in my, I'd probably say, top 10 all-time favorite players. I love the swing of Ken Griffey Jr. I love the fact that he accepted and aged gracefully and endured injury rather than start doing the juice. Body shape never changed, and he had such a sweet swing. Loved Ken Griffey Jr. Think of him more, though, as a home run hitter, if I'm honest. Tony Gwynn, whereas, huge average, you know, always seem to get the bat on ball. And because I don't really know the other two nearly as well, that's why I'm going with Gwynny, one of the superstars that I love to watch. So my prediction is Tony Gwynn.
Solid pick, Gouldy. Definitely solid pick.
But wrong.
Thanks for trying. let me go through them.
Do I get a sticker? You did well. You
get a plush toy, but not the big one. You get the little one. Okay. The little
put me out of my misery.
Okay. So in no particular order, to quote Eric Jansen, Dante Bichette had 1,584 hits in his 1990s career. Ken Griffey Jr., 1,622 hits.
Ooh, okay.
Tony Gwynn, 1,713 hits.
Oh, well, second is worse. I'm on the rostrum.
That's why I said you get the small plush toy. And so that leaves us with Mark Grace, the Cubs first baseman, a dodgy fellow if you look at his time after. He was a good old boy in all the wrong ways, but was a great, great contact hitter for those Cubs teams. 1,754 hits. Number two is Rafael Palmeiro, actually.
Oh, that's right. And you didn't even put him on the list. See if you put
I now understand the thought process that goes into it. It's hard, right? Because you want to – I was originally going to put in Cal Ripken and Tony Gwynn, and then Mark Grace was going to stand out, right? Because I was going to give you three superstars and who is different from the rest. So I had to put in Dante Bichette to kind of mix it up.
Okay, I like that. A little more I like that logic. You just wanted to stump me. Nice to know. Eric wouldn't do that. Eric would want to give me a chance. But hey.
Eric would call you beforehand and say, Here's the answer. The goldfish would forget.
Do you know what? He has done that on a couple of occasions because I've got so many wrong on a consecutive basis, and he wants me not to look like a total idiot. And then I'm an even bigger idiot because I forget what he said, and I'm racking my brains going, which one did he say?
And you can't ask him mid-show, right?
I know,
you can't say, you told me the answer and I forgot, because then it just blows the whole deal.
Well, thank you for that. I will do the in-game trivia next week. I probably might give Eric a little call, see if he wants to give me a hand. Big love to Eric. That is the seventh inning stretch. Doesn't seem to be the same with our dear friend. So moving on to the mailbag as we close in on the end of the show. And as always, we love to hear from you on our Twitter handle for the Johnny and Josh Show, at the Johnny and Josh Show, or of course on Facebook. I did get one reference which I loved and I did want to focus on, and that's from at UK Mets. And he had a picture of Gary Thorne. This is great. Love Gary Thorne. Well known to MLB fans here in the UK via Channel 5 coverage and his World Series calls with JG and JC back in the day. Thank you for that. That was very sweet of you to mention. And I did want to ask you, buddy, you know, we were spoiled rotten, you know, Joe Morgan, John Miller, etc. Did you have a personal favorite amongst all the show callers that we experienced during back in the day of Channel 5 baseball?
Yeah, I mean, I loved Gary Thorne. He was fantastic. But to me, John Miller was that type of broadcaster you want for baseball.
Yeah.
It just felt like you were sitting on a porch, drinking a lemonade on a Sunday afternoon with a light breeze. And there was something very relaxing about it. And Gary Thorne, great too. But to me, John Miller was my favorite who he worked with over the years. And I liked, you know, I know there was Fire Joe Morgan. I enjoyed him. Rick Sutcliffe was great. I mean, these guys were all
pros. I agree,
Rick
Sutcliffe was great. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you get
to that level. Do you remember I met John Miller? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Which I think was my first road trip in 2004.
Are we going to say the one negative thing about him?
I don't think we are. No, okay. I'm going to let that go. Because you know what? You know, maybe he just didn't have any mints on him.
Right. It happens.
Okay, let's move on.
Halitosis happens.
Absolutely.
You know, the thing was, is back then, I almost feel like you had to earn it more. I look at, you know how I feel about A-Rod as a broadcaster. But I find him to be really, really subpar. And, you know, I wonder, back then, you'd get a Bob Uecker or a Joe Garagiola. They may have not been the biggest stars, but they had insight. I don't think the biggest star is necessarily the way to go to have for your color man. It's someone who's played the game at a high level, but really gets the game.
That's interesting. I mean, again, you know, I love to draw parallels to British sport. I look at the football pundits. The most obvious ones aren't particularly good in terms of, you know, they were very successful footballers. I'm a big fan of a couple that I, you know, didn't hit the real big time. Janine Janus, who is now big time on the BBC, he's excellent. He expresses himself really well, but he's got a real insight to the game. And he wasn't the most famous player of his era by any stretch of the imagination. So, I'm Sutton. There's another one who won the Premiership with Blackburn. You know, not nearly as successful as Alan Shearer, for instance, but I really love his insight. You know, it's value added. That's what I'm looking for from a pundit. It's the ability to express themselves well, but value added.
It's a different skill set, right? And we talk about this with managers as well, too. Some of the greatest players are not great managers. Ted Williams, one of the greatest baseball players of all time, manager, because he didn't have the ability necessarily to transfer that skill set. And I think the same is true with playing and broadcasting.
Can't agree more. Cannot agree more. Now, I want to pump up the competition. We referenced at the top of the show, we're looking to get our Twitter followers to 2,000. We were on 1955 last week. We've made massive progress. A whole seven have come in. And don't forget, when we hit 2,000, JC and I are going to both come up with a goodie bag. We're going into competition for the quality of the goodie bag. I'm throwing in a car. I'm throwing in a house just to outdo JC. No, I'm not. Of course I'm not. That's a joke. But we will come together. So we'll have two winners, which we will choose from all of those 2,000 followers. So if you can get somebody out there, a friend, a mother, even somebody who's not interested in baseball, get them following us on the Johnny and Josh Show so we get to 2,000. And we're going to have a goodie bag to the winner. And we should do competitions more often, JC. We should just give away. I've got so much baseball kit from our road trip days. You know, I want to give it away because it's just sitting in a bag and that's not where it should be. So we'll try and do a competition every single week.
Goldie, I can't sell my books, so I'd love to give them away to someone.
Buddy, do you know what? I thought it'd be too obvious if I chose one of your books right off the bat. But I promise you, I'm going to show you some love in the way that Eric hasn't been doing.
Hurtful.
But it's going to happen. When you least expect it, I'm going to go, do you know, I came across this book the other day. Because as we all know, I've got about 9 copies every single one. Because you keep sending to them, forgetting that you'd already sent it before. You know, every Christmas.
Exactly. Hey, look, I wrote this book 6 years ago. You could still read it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. If you want to get involved, there's the buttons at the bottom. Play piano, click, subscribe. And don't forget also, check out our other Ted Fred stable of podcasts. The one I want to mention, obviously, first is the one that I'm involved with, and that is the World of Fantasy Baseball at BHP Pod. That's the Twitter handle behind home plate. That's what BHP stands for, because it's the best seat in the house if fantasy baseball is your game.
Am I on there yet, Gould?
You are on it. And that's how excited. This is why I wanted to make a big
shout-out. Bosh, back of the net.
Absolutely. We've got JC as our special guest, and I'm so thrilled. A man who has, for years, said how much he doesn't like fantasy baseball. And it turns out he's got a story to tell about his origins of fantasy baseball, which will blow your socks off. But you're going to have to check out this week.
And Gouldie, I don't know if you looked today, we are tied in our one fantasy league.
We are. Buddy, and we get backwards and forwards.
It's fun. I got to be honest. I'm enjoying that piece of it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I don't love fantasy, but that you and I are going back and forth every day. That's the only battle that matters.
You know, buddy, that's what makes me laugh. We're in sixth and seventh. We're mid-table.
Who cares?
But we don't care, because we're just
you gotta find joy in mediocrity, Gouldie. That's been my mantra for my life.
Yeah. Well, suddenly I've noticed your activity's gone up a notch or two. It's clearly you suddenly think, I want to win this, or at least not win it. I want to beat Gouldie.
Yeah. So, oh, I don't care about winning.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, I'm trying to think of a time where you finished ahead of me. It's been very rare we've played year after year.
I will dig out the stats, because I think you're going to be a little shocked, young man. A little shocked. You had a good run, but of recently you've been dominated by the JG.
I came second in that league last year.
Last year. If you remember, I forgot the draft night, and I hadn't done a draft order.
You are
with half my players on the IL.
You know, this was a fun show, but you're going to Excuseville, and that right turn is going to lead you right into a dead end.
Excuse me. That was the reality. And as you know, I was in last place, and you shamed me on this very podcast.
I'm waiting for you to bring up the Dizzy Bat Race, too. Whenever things go south, there are a whole host, a legion of excuses.
I won Manager of the Year in La Liga last year, because I went from last with 35 points when I started to try. Because
there's no Manager of the Year.
Well, there is in my world. I awarded it to myself. Not even my league, and I wanted
love it.
Anyway, apart from at BHP Pod, that's the Twitter handle, and don't forget to check out the podcast on all good postcard providers, and that is Behind Home Plate with the legend and dear friend James Holden, who is a fantastic fantasy baseball player and a top boy. There's also the Nat Coombs Show at the NC Show. Do check that out, of course, Nat, the legend of Ted Fred, that we're all part of the same stable. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, we're across everything, so get subscribing, get liking, and get involved and be a part of the family. That's it from us. JC, I tell you what, it may have been lonely, but it's been a joy. It's been an absolute joy to be with my old mucker after all these years, just the two of us on the podcast. Thank you for joining me, mate.
Gouldie, I love the four of us, but this was fun.
Fantastic. You take good care of yourself. And to everyone out there, thank you for listening to the Johnny and Josh Show. We look forward to having your company next week for Behind Home Plate and the Johnny and Josh Show and all the podcasts associated. Until then, take good care. Stay safe.